Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast hangout. This is episode 47. And as always, I have here with me Artur Sosnes from Latvia, that has just woke up from the bed to record this podcast, right?
Yeah, do I look like that? Yeah, it's my hair.
Well, I assume that was the case because we are not used to record this earlier, but it's okay. It's always interesting. So, Artur, how are you doing?
Thanks, I'm fine. I'm actually getting much, much closer to JavaScript development than I was before. I am now working in a new startup company it's called Countly, and it's an open source mobile analytics, providing analytics services for mobile apps, and it is completely written in JavaScript. So as you would probably say, I'm moving to the dark side of JavaScript, but I'm now working with Node.js mostly and using frameworks like Backbone for development for UI. So it's been an amazing month, lots of new things to learn, to try out, and I'm very excited to work on it forward.
Well, this is the JavaScript hangout, so it's not the dark side. It's only the dark side when we record the PHP podcast.
Oh, okay.
But that's fine. But so you are working as an employee, or are you a founder or something?
No, I was involved in another startup, and that startup closed. That was like my main job for the most time, and that startup had a relation to this startup, so this new account like kind of employed me. So currently, yeah, I'm working for them.
So you are not a founder or a partner in that?
It was founded more than a year ago, I think.
Yeah, so you are just being paid to work there, I suppose. Yep. Okay, that's fine. So I suppose in the next times probably we have some more Node.js components submitted from somebody from Latvia, right?
It could be quite tricky because you know what they say about apps? There's an app for that. Then now while looking at Node.js, they're almost for every need that there is a Node package for that. So it's hard to find a niche where to create something new, but I'll try.
Well, for instance, for the JS classes to be innovative, it just matters there is no other package in there that does the same over there, so it would still count. And as a matter of fact, the Node.js packages are just a minority right now, but that could always change in the future. But okay, let's see if you can bring us something new from that you can share from your work. Okay, so now we're going to actually move to the podcast and start talking about things that have been happening in the JavaScript world, starting from some news that some may think that they are sort of sad because Yahoo had just announced that they are giving up on the development of the YUI toolkit. Well, personally, I think I never tried it in practice other than looking at examples and such, but I know people that have been using it a lot, although over time libraries such as jQuery sort of obfuscated other libraries like YUI that used to be more popular in the past. Artur, did you manage to try at least YUI somehow?
Unfortunately not, and now probably I even won't know what it is exactly. I know that basically all Yahoo is built on it. There is a lot of YUI underneath, but I haven't looked and tried it. And yes, basically as I explained in the article, there are lots of new technologies and approaches in JavaScript rising, like Node.js, like Angular, and Backbone for easier managing of the views representation, and focus is changing to that new direction, new approach, and there has been less and less commits or contributions from external developers to YUI, and basically that's why they are will stop working on it.
Yeah, well, I think if people were not really using it much nowadays, that's probably that because it was not really that popular as it was probably once. So maybe not many people will miss it. Okay. Now moving on to another topic. Let me find the actual screen here. I have too many windows open here that were making it confusing, but okay. So the next topic is related with a library that is meant to make it easy to sort of replace the libraries that, components that load content that probably relies on document write calls. And when you load something from a remote site, the progress of the page loading sort of halts until the remote request is, remote content is downloaded. So the idea here is this: that this library named PostScribe actually makes it asynchronous. So you can load a page that has some remote JavaScript, and you can use it to continue loading the rest of the page without having to wait for that part of the page to actually download. I was trying to look at the examples here, but I'm not sure if I can see as it used to be before, because I supposedly would see some results here, but for some reason they are not working. I don't know, maybe this got stuck. Oh, okay, it's working now. So they have several examples here. Maybe if I try to increase the font here, you can see it better. There are several examples, and for some reason this seems to be slow, or maybe it's just me. Yeah.
Basically, we can see that the PostScribe does the job asynchronously.
Yeah. This is what should appear if you do the document write, and asynchronously with PostScribe it would appear okay. And then
they're probably, I don't know what are those errors.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is the the right response to expect. Cannot redefine property HTML.
Okay.
F and F. Well, so PostScribe it's working, but it doesn't say what we should expect from the RAS. So I think this example is not really, really working as it should. Okay, anyway, the idea is that you can load pages asynchronously and using the document write that otherwise probably would be blocking the loading the rest of the page.
We saw lots of different approaches to that problem, like using a sync tag or injecting the script asynchronously, injecting remote script asynchronously, and this is just one of the another approaches that could be done, that after the page is loaded, only then you can add HTML contents directly with document write to load the script, and the PostScribe could do this synchronous job asynchronously.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to play with the options here to see if I could see anything different, but I don't know what is going on. Probably this server of this.
Yeah, it seems that the other servers are not hooked up correctly or something like that.
Well, anyway, that's the purpose, so we're going to move on. And the next topic is related with using cryptography for several purposes on the browser side. So basically, I found this article, which is in practice a presentation, that talks about web crypto, which is an API that I'm not sure if all browsers implement it. I've never tried it, but it certainly explains how it would work in practice. You can use cryptography to implement not only encrypting of data, but also to get hashes. I don't know if cryptography is that important, because once, on the browser side, I mean, once you get the access to the browser data, you probably can intercept the sensitive information. And when you talk about cryptography, we talk about passwords that need to be used to encrypt the data. So actually, we even comment about one package, I think it was by Jason Griffin, that would encrypt data to be stored on the browser side. And well, it was not clear from where the password would come. Maybe it was a password that would probably come from the server and be used once. And from then on, you could encrypt and decrypt data to be stored in local storage. And maybe the main value of that is that you can have your local storage data stored with cryptography. So unless somebody finds a way to find the password, the key to decrypt it, nobody would be able to decrypt things.
Theoretically, it would be possible to use the key as some properties of the current browser, like the browser version, name, language, maybe IP address. To combine it all together, it would make a key that is automatically generated, and so making the storage accessible only from this machine on this browser, theoretically.
Yeah. Well, that could be a way to use it, but well, maybe the idea is not really to make it 100% secure, but maybe just make it more difficult for somebody to attack without actually getting into the application JavaScript that is being run to encrypt data. And for people that are looking for data on hard drives, just scanning on files that are encrypted, probably will not find any information. But if the information is not encrypted, they could find the information more easily. And okay, that's just to mention about this API for people that are more interested in looking into this. This the actual introduction is of the presentation mentions the post-Snowden era, and maybe they are just they are also considering using cryptography to send and receive data to the server. But at a certain point, you need to exchange the keys to encrypt the data. So if you are not using SSL, the key would also be exposed at a certain point if it is being exchanged between the browser and the server. But okay, maybe I'm not getting this right. And anyway, there is this presentation about the Web Crypto API for those that are interested in these topics. So moving on to the next topic, which is one of those articles. In this case, it mentioned 6 points to define constructs with the only one argument. The idea, let me increase the font here if I can. Yes, I can, but it is large. No, it's okay now. So the idea is that instead of doing something like this to create, to construct an object, you could do like many people do, which is to pass an object and to the actual object instantiation and take some properties from that object. So instead of passing many arguments, just pass one, but you still need to build the object that you want to pass as with parameters. So the first reason that they mentioned is it would be for easy maintenance and optional new. This is interesting because they are playing some tricks to avoid passing many arguments, and then instead of passing it to many properties one argument at a time, it would pass a single argument, and as you can see here, they are applying here some logic just to determine if this the current this object is actually an instance of the object of the construct that you've been calling, and if not, it would actually return a new object, passing the parameters to the object, and if it is the actual instance, it will assign just the variables.
Basically, the easier maintenance part here is that if you add another parameter, like, I don't know, phone, in vanilla person class, you would need to change it in all three places, like the passing arguments, then recalling an instance, and then assigning properties. But in person, there would be only one place to change it.
Yeah, that's it. Another point is you sort of pass the parameters as the options to object will be like passing named parameters. There are no named parameters in JavaScript, but this syntax is certainly very similar to named parameters.
Yeah.
Another point is you would actually deal with optional parameters. So if you have certain parameters that are optional, you do not need to pass them. But this way, you would not even have to remember what is the right order, nor take in account the actual values that are being passed. Assumed as defaults because they are optional anyway. So once you pass them to as an object, the actual construction function would assume the right defaults. Well, it's not really what is happening here, but if you use this syntax, you have to rewrite this somehow to only assign values if the properties of the options parameter is being defined. Another supposed option, advantage that they mentioned is you get JSON deserialization for free, because in reality you would be actually already passing some data in JSON format, already deserialized, which would be the definition of the object with the options that you want to pass. And then there is one point that's, for me, it's not very clear. It talks about idempotence, which basically is a property of functions that when they apply to themselves, they return the function itself. The application of the function itself. And here, I really not sure if this is very clear. Artus, did you get this this supposed advantage?
I'm actually not sure why vanilla person is not idempotent. You could actually also make it behave like that, and I think it was done in the first example where I think it could be done with vanilla person, but yes, the idea is that to make it idempotent, so it doesn't matter if we pass a data to a constructor or another instance, it would return us an instance to work with. So
yeah,
it would be that, like a safe casting form. We don't know what data it is, we just pass it to constructor and then use it as an instance. We will know that the output would be an instance. But that's, I think, for me, what value would it provide.
Right, I think what they mean is that if you have an object, for instance, in this case, it would be person that is already instantiated with some properties, if you pass it to create a new object, passing it as parameter, it will take the object variables and assign them to the new object. So it will create a copy of the object.
Oh yes, and you can't do it with vanilla because it does not accept on one single argument but multiple arguments. So
yeah, you would have to.
Yeah, you can't pass it with one argument. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and this is avoiding boilerplate is another advantage that I did not get quite right. It just says if you are the main-driven design guy, you struggle with verbosity of defining all your classes. But with one hierarchy pattern, you can avoid the boilerplate with a simple function like this.
Yes, basically, the struct function with this smaller case is struct function returns a new class. So you can dynamically define classes by providing what properties they should have.
Well, this is really, really abstract. Okay, well, I think they are applying a trick here, creating a function named struct, and the struct here with is an object that takes properties, and in case the properties are the definition of the properties of the object, then there is this struct function,
which basically a class.
And struct meta and props equal to props.
Well,
then
that's
returns struct when you construct the object. It returns struct the. It would be the function here. Well, this is very confusing. I really not get this point. Did you understand anything here?
Yeah. As I said, that's also, for example, they create the class person by passing the name and surname. They could create another class, I don't know, an apple, and pass other arguments. Like they could be a color and a size, for example. That way, the function struct with small case s dynamically returns dynamically created classes, and then we can instantiate these classes by passing the one single argument that would cover the properties to the struct function.
So this struct here that is returned is not really the object, it's just some meta object, if you can call it that, I think. Well, that's what it seems to me. And then you would call new to get, well, I'm not sure if this is the intention, but that's what it seems. Okay, well, I was convinced that passing options would be an interesting approach, at least for construction classes that may have many parameters for the reasons that were described here. So, moving on to the next topic, we are going to talk a bit about a library named Istanbul that is for code coverage. Personally, I have not been using much code coverage. Actually, I do not do much testing in JavaScript, but in this case, it is actually a library for the server side, and it mentions here npm, so I suppose this is Node.js library. Artus, have you been using testing and the code coverage tools?
Yes, just in the new work, in the new sphere, the scope that I'm working on, I work a lot with the code and provide testing, and I was also implementing new tests and code coverage, and I was using Blanket.js. It's kind of similar to Istanbul. I think the Blanket.js would go the first place in code coverage between Node.js developer and Istanbul is probably the second one, most popular. And I actually was quite interested in how they do that, how they do they test the code coverage. I was looking more into it. Basically, the process is that you specify JavaScript files, then the library reads a file, and they transform the code to place the hook in every scope. So then you run tests not on the original code, but on transformed code. The process is called instrumentation. So you run the tests on the instrumented code, and every time you walk into some of the scopes, it like it dispatches the hook. Yeah, the test. Well, we had a call here, so this section was covered. So in the end, there is an option to provide a report of how many code was covered and which sections was not covered at all. And it's very useful to see.
Yeah. Well, at least it should help you to figure what code may have not been tested, even if you add tests for all your code, it doesn't mean that it will catch all the bugs, because there can be an infinite number of situations with special values, special conditions that your code may have not been tested on. But at least with some testing, you reduce the chances of shipping code with serious bugs that otherwise could be detected earlier using some testing libraries. So, okay, so now moving on, the next topic is about a library called hello.js.
Hello.js.
Yes, exactly. And I'm trying to open the window, but for some reason the Google Hangouts is not allowing me to do it. So basically, this library is to make API calls using OAuth 2 and actually also OAuth 1 for querying REST APIs and anything else. And this is interesting because I have developed a package for OAuth 1 and 2, but in PHP, and once in a while there is some users that would like to do something similar in JavaScript. Well, it is possible to do everything in JavaScript, probably with a different OAuth flow, because in the regular OAuth flow that is used on server-side applications, there is some redirection between the pages of your application and the OAuth server for authorization. But for JavaScript on the browser side, there is no such thing as redirection, because you only have calling JavaScript code and some return code. So there is a different flow. But my concern here would be more with application keys and the secrets that you need to somehow ship to the browser. And make it available to the browser. And these keys are usually secret. You cannot share it with not even your application users. I'm not sure how this API handles it, but at least for OAuth 1, they say they use an OAuth proxy. But I assume that the OAuth proxy knows about what are the secret keys. I'm not sure if I'm getting this right. Arthur, are you familiar with OAuth? Did you get how this works?
Every time I need to implement OAuth authentication in some work, I always think, this time I will go through it and see how it works. But then I find the libraries that does exactly what I need, so I use it, so I never have around what it does exactly.
I don't know. This seems to be a sort of a wrapper to different libraries, because it allows you to authenticate and then make some API calls. And
it seems it provides kind of very seamless integrations. Yeah, so it's mostly, I think, relying on what the other server actually does, because there is a Facebook JavaScript SDK also, and they do authentication with Facebook, so it is somehow possible, and Hello.js just reuses it.
Yes, but in this case, I think they are using some kind of proxy server, because there must be some real... Your browser is going to redirect. I see a redirect HTML. So I suppose this is the return page.
Yes. And
then they also pass client IDs. And these are usual secret. Well,
but wouldn't redirect would not be a problem. You just open a new window, and as it is a child window, it is controlled, and when it gets back to the redirect URL you provided, so you can retrieve any values there and pass it to the parent window.
Yeah, well, as long as it is really a static page, but it doesn't preserve the state of anything that it had before, because it reloads the page. Well, I confess that this may be confusing and maybe misinterpreting this right. You see JavaScript code here that shows client application IDs.
In Facebook, you can disclose application ID. You can't disclose application secret. So they
That's the OAuth 2.
So but somehow you can authenticate only based on app ID.
Yeah. Well, maybe this implements some kind of black magic that I'm not following here. But anyway, for anybody that is interested to make API calls to many servers, I'm not sure if this library has built-in support for just these libraries, or it is configurable to support other libraries, because each server has specific endpoints that you need to redirect. And I'm trying to see if this works. It is not working at all, because probably this is relying on some pop-up windows.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I need to start from the start. That's the problem. So the start here is...
You need to authenticate on the top of the page. There are lots of buttons, and you need to authenticate, for example, is Facebook, and then you probably would be able to retrieve the additional...
Okay, let's try Facebook. Oh, I see. There is an application call... I've never seen this application. And there is no information about this application, right?
Oh, there's just for the test of the page. Yes.
Yes, it's an application from the guy that developed this package. And this is a bit confusing. So, from here on, I would accept. Say OK. And
it reloaded the page.
Reloaded the page. It was a pop-up, right?
Yeah. So on pop-up close, you can execute the function to reload the parent window. And that's exactly what it did.
Yeah. So if I am logged, I suppose that it can execute some other...
Yep, it should.
Some other methods, like this one. No.
Yeah, just click on the green checkbox that's now appeared. Yeah, it should.
It's working.
Developer of the PHP classes work site.
Oh, this is impressive.
We can see where did you go to high school.
As if it is not public in the book. Well, okay. People that are interested to implement this JavaScript on the a browser side, OAuth on browser side, there are certain... this is interesting. I'll try to study a bit about this later.
This is what I would call it works automagically.
Well, maybe there are just a few details that I'm missing, but I'll have to study it better. Anyway, moving on to another topic. This one is not exactly about PHP, but I think it interests most PHP developers, and not just PHP, because it is related with MySQL. This completely was announced a new plugin for MySQL Server that lets you connect to it using a regular HTTP connection. You can use a browser, but you can also use a socket connection. You can use a HTTP client to connect to it and execute queries just like you would with any web server, but in this case you would send SQL queries. And it uses JSON as a format to communicate with the server. JSON may not be the fastest format, more compact format to use, but it is portable. And for applications that are not performance intensive, the overhead of using JSON as communications format, it is not a big deal. Anyway, I thought it was interesting, Arthur. I don't know if you followed this development. Do you think it is interesting for the PHP world, or maybe not that much?
I would say it could be more interesting for JavaScript world, because previously, if you would want to access MySQL database from JavaScript, you would need to set up a server-side REST API, for example, and program an intermediate layer with PHP, for example.
You mean communicating from the browser directly?
Well, you couldn't do it, I think, from browser directly. There is no MySQL driver for JavaScript, as far as I know. So it would be through server-side either way. But now it basically behaves as a REST API and simply can send HTTP requests directly to the database without programming the backend, the PHP, skipping the web server part. So it could be probably also locally on the same machine.
Yes.
And it communicates in a familiar manner that you could also execute SQL queries, SQL queries. And the only thing that I'm kind of concerned of is security. So
I think it's not really meant to be called from the browser.
Yeah.
It's more like be called from Node.js or something on the server side, because authentication will always exist. So if you want to connect to a database server from a browser, even if you can make it, you have to have the username and password. And if you put the username and password in the browser, that probably causes some security concerns. So I don't think that is the use case they are thinking for this project. I think this is more to say, like, now you can do as CouchDB that uses JavaScript and JSON to exchange data with the server. And I think that's more to become on par with that, because personally I don't see an application for this, even because it's less efficient to exchange data. So for queries that exchange lots of data, probably it will make it slower.
Recently, as I started to learn Node.js, looking at some examples, and it was awesomely easy to create REST API with Node.js because with using MongoDB, like NoSQL, on the server side, because you simply take JSON, you put it in, and then you take the JSON out, and then you output it. So there is no modification. Like, you can create a REST API that manipulates whole documents.
You don't have to call that complicated function that is named JSON encode.
It's really, really a little code to do it. So you can basically put whole JSON documents, and it would automatically put them in database or take them out when you need it. So this is something similar, only you don't need any code at all.
Yeah, you don't need that extra function, JSON encode, to do that. Yeah, well, anyway, this is just a curiosity. I don't see many people using this on the PHP world. It's interesting. And even for in other worlds, I don't think so. MySQL also implemented a Memcache interface to perform simple queries to the server. So you could also use it like you use Memcache servers. But in this case, you still use your MySQL. So I think Oracle is committed to give you no excuse to use anything else other than MySQL servers.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is just an interesting topic. So we are moving on to other topics. Now it's time to talk about a new, actually a regular section on which we comment the Innovation Award winners of in this case July, and we actually those were voted in August, and then in September the results come out, so we can start talking about them. First, we're going to talk about the winners of JavaScript JS classes. Artus, which ones would you like to comment? There are actually two, so just pick one.
Yeah. Okay, so I would comment about a really interesting component. So when you execute your code, sometimes there are bottlenecks, it's working slowly and you don't know why, and you need a way to identify where is the bottleneck, which function is the one that slows the code down. And this package does exactly that. It profiles the function and measures its execution time. So you can like divide your code into these components and measure, trying to find out where is the bottleneck. There is a simple example provided with the class that there are functions, and we simply provide them to the to the profiler with the parameters we want to pass to the function. And in demo, we could see how it performs. So it says that it started at a specific timestamp, ended at a specific timestamp, and how long did it take this for this function to execute.
Yeah.
So this kind of component really eases the tasks to identify the bottlenecks of the code. And component was created by Tony L. Requena from Spain. Probably you would know better how to pronounce this surname.
Well, that's great. And let me switch here to the other package that I will comment. Starting the screen sharing if it works. Okay, the other package that I would like to comment, this one is from Thomas Björk from Sweden. He has been a great contributor, has sent several packages, and from the five that he has sent already, four were nominated to the Innovation Award. And okay, let me scroll it to the right position. Well, this basically is an optimized version of a component that could load JavaScript and CSS from remote servers, and the advantage of his approach is that he uses the local storage to cache the previously loaded JavaScript or CSS or even images, because once they are stored in on the browser, next request they are needed, they will take no time to load, and this is awesome. I think this somehow we comment about this in a previous JavaScript podcast of this possibility, but it's great to see an actual component that implements this approach of caching these assets in local storage or session storage, depending on whatever is available on your browser. So kudos to Thomas Björk for his contribution, and for that he was entitled to pick one book of choice from PACT. Now I'm going to mention about the rankings of the Innovation Award winners of 2014, and so far Thomas Björk is leading as an individual author with four packages and 15 points, And it's followed by several other authors, like David Castillo from Mexico, with two packages in 13 points. Then end with Jordan Marmolejo with two packages in 10 points. And then several other authors with one package, some more with more, but with less points. On the ranking for in terms of countries for 2014, so far France is leading with three packages and 17 points. It is followed right after by Sweden with four packages and 50 points. Those the same are from Thomas Bjork. And then Mexico with two packages and 13 points. Those are the packages of David Castillo. And then Spain with three packages with 12 points, followed right after by Italy with three packages and 8 points, Canada with three packages and 7 points, and then several other countries with just one package and but less points. So as you, we may see, the competition is heating up. It is interesting. PHP, the JS classes site has somehow been affected by Google search ranking updates in the last 2 years, and that sort of brought less users that to become potential contributors. So the number of contributors that have been sending packages, at least in the early the first months of the year, was very slow. I mean, the increase in packages was very slow. And but since I think June, Google did an update on the search rankings, and the traffic to JS classes improved a lot, and that allowed to bring many more packages. And as you may see below, I mean actually above, in the next month that we see here, I think it is August, we already see many contributions. I hope that this contribution keep coming at this pace, because JS class has the potential to grow a lot. And it just depends on the users to participate. So with this, we practically ended this podcast. We have covered several interesting libraries. Lately, I confess, I've not been able to find many interesting topics about JavaScript when compared, for instance, with PHP, but I hope these topics have been interesting enough. And also next month, I hope that Artus can bring us also more interesting topics to talk about now that he's rediscovering the Node.js world, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
right.
All I have to say for now.
I cannot promise anything. So we reached the end of this podcast. So on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.